On the 5th of August 1916, Lieutenant George Butterworth of the 13th Durham Light Infantry was shot by a sniper during a trench raid near Pozières. It might have been the early end of the life of just another young officer in World War I, but unknown to most of his fellow officers and men, George Sainton K. Butterworth was a celebrated composer. Welcome to Series 3, Episode 2. My name is John Pope. I'm a volunteer speaker with the Commonwealth War Graves Commission and a story moderator on the Forevermore series, which details the lives of people who died for their countries. I have an interest in the stories of the ordinary men and women who served in extraordinary times. A few weeks ago, I bought a job lot of old vinyl LPs on eBay. Like most people of a certain age, I've got a loft full of old vinyl, but the Renaissance over the last few years has brought a new interest in a format thought to have been dead and buried by the 1990s. Sorting through, I found a record featuring some of George Butterworth's music, A Shropshire Lad, The Banks of Green Willow and some others, although he published only a few works before he joined the army and destroyed quite a few more, believing them to be not worth preserving. I also found works by Vaughan Williams, the composer Arthur Bliss and the pianist Cecil Coles, all of whom served in World War I in various theatres of war. So I thought it would make an interesting podcast episode to focus on some of the composers and musicians who served and include some short extracts of some of their music. George Sainton K. Butterworth was born on the 12th of July 1885 in Paddington in London. His father, Sir Alexander K. Butterworth, moved the family to Driffield Terrace, York, soon after, when he became the general manager of the North Eastern Railway Company. George's mother, Julia, was a former professional singer, and she gave her young son piano lessons, which he soon took to, and he became the organist at the chapel of his prep school, Aysgarth in Beedale, North Yorkshire. In 1899, 14-year-old George won a scholarship to Eton, and then in 1904 went to Trinity College, Oxford, to study classics, or greats as it was then known, prior to a career in law. But music and cricket interested him far more, and he became president of the music club, befriending Ralph Vaughan Williams, more of him later, and becoming a founder member of the English Folk Dancing and Song Society and a member of the National Demonstration Troupe for Morris Dancing. Edwardian England saw a huge interest in folk songs, traditional dancing such as Morris Dancing and pastoral pursuits, and a greater appreciation of what they deemed the countryside idyll. After leaving university, Butterworth taught for a while and studied briefly at the Royal College of Music, but he left early to begin a tour of England, largely by train and on foot, talking to local people in small towns and villages and gathering examples of traditional folk songs, dances and poems. During this time, he set 11 of A.E. Housman's poems to authentic folk music, which later became his Six Songs from a Shropshire Lad, and two other orchestral works based on folk songs he collected in East Chiltington and Billingshurst in Sussex in 1907, two English idylls, written in 1911, and The Banks of Green Willow, written in 1913. When war started, Butterworth was at something of a loose end, and he saw the war as an opportunity for purpose and application. He was unable to persuade the Oxford University Officer Training Corps to recommend him for a commission, so he enlisted instead as a private in the 6th Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry on the 1st of September 1914. After serving and training at Aldershot, he was transferred to the 13th Battalion, the Durham Light Infantry, and later commissioned as a second lieutenant. He was promoted to lieutenant in May 1915 and sent to the Western Front on the 10th of September. Being a soldier suited him, although he omitted to tell his fellow officers that he was a composer. By all accounts, he was a modest and rather blunt man who disliked artifice. He destroyed much of his unpublished work, how much exactly is unknown, but feared that if he was killed in action, he'd be unable to improve it. The rest of his manuscripts he bequeathed to his friend and mentor, Ralph Vaughan Williams. In July 1916, the 13th Durham Light Infantry were moved to the Somme, and Butterworth was recommended for the Military Cross. The citation read, "Before the morning of July 28, 1916, a company under Lieutenant G.S. K. Butterworth, M.C., assisted by a company of the 12th, had gained ground on the right by digging what later became known as Butterworth Trench, 200 yards in length and almost parallel to the German switch line. 10 men were wounded in doing this, and Lieutenant K. Butterworth was also hit, but he remained in command." According to the battalion war diary, dated the 5th of August, shortly after midnight, Lieutenant K. Butterworth was ordered to come round the loop with A Company and form up for an attack, but our own shells were falling short here, and this could not be done. The death of Lieutenant G.S. K. Butterworth, M.C., was a great loss to English music, as well as to the 13th, who knew him as a gallant and efficient officer. He was killed in Munster Trench by a German sniper shortly after dawn. Butterworth's men buried him in the side of the trench during the battle, preparing to return later and recover his body for burial, but a German counterattack prevented them from doing so. His temporary grave was lost, and he's commemorated on the Tietvaal Memorial. When his brigade commander, Brigadier General Page Croft, wrote to Butterworth's father to inform him of his death, his family were surprised to learn that he'd been awarded the Military Cross. The brigadier was equally astonished to find that Butterworth had been such a promising English composer, and Brigadier Croft later wrote that Butterworth was a brilliant musician in times of peace and an equally brilliant soldier in times of stress. So in memory of George Butterworth, here's a short excerpt from The Banks of Green Willow. Perhaps less well known was Cecil Frederick George Coles, who was born in Kirkcudbright in Galloway, Scotland, on the 7th of October 1888. His father and mother, Frederick and Margaret, were artists and had a keen interest in archaeology. Indeed, after his mother died, his father became the keeper of the Queen Street Museum in Edinburgh. George was encouraged from an early age to study music, and he went to Edinburgh University in 1905. He too won a scholarship, but this time to the London College of Music, later meeting Gustav Holst, who had become something of a friend and mentor. Cecil won another scholarship to study and work in Stuttgart, and was soon exposed to the music of Wagner and Richard Strauss, which may have influenced his later works. He learned to speak German, and was sufficiently aware of the political and military situation to return to England before the outbreak of war. Some of his contemporaries were interred as enemy aliens for the duration. Once home, work was hard to come by, and for a while he became organist at St Catherine's Church in London. Here he met and married Phoebe Relton, a chorister, and they settled in Catford, south-east London, and had 2 children. But when war started, he joined the 9th Battalion, the London Regiment, the Queen's Victoria Rifles, as a sergeant bandmaster. Although he was on active service, he continued to write and compose, once sending his friend Holst a mud and bloodstained music manuscript through the post. Some of his work was lost when a German shell hit the camp they were staying in and destroyed the band's instruments and sheet music. As bandmaster and a non-combatant, Cecil was expected to act as a stretcher-bearer, and he died of shock from wounds received whilst rescuing injured soldiers during the German spring offensives on the Somme, on the 26th of April 1918. The medical officer wrote to his wife Phoebe, describing that he was unaware of the seriousness of his injuries, humming a little Beethoven and asking whether his piano playing would be affected. Cecil Coles is buried in Crewe British Cemetery in Plot 1, just northwest of Amiens. Coles is perhaps best known for his Four Verlaine songs, his Scottish Highland themes, and Behind the Lines, an excerpt of which entitled Cortège was used as the theme music for the Channel 4 programme The First World War. After the war, his widow Phoebe rarely spoke of her husband's loss. Indeed, their daughter Catherine only learned of his work when she too studied music under Gustav Holst, and the family connection was finally recognised. The composer later presented her with a small box containing her father's surviving manuscripts. Our third composer is Arthur Bliss. He was born on the 2nd of August 1891 in Barnes in London to an American businessman father, Francis Bliss, and his wife Agnes. He was the eldest of three boys and educated at Bilton Prep, Rugby School and Pembroke College, Cambridge, where he studied musical composition. He continued at the Royal College of Music before the First World War broke out, but was immediately commissioned as a second lieutenant in the 13th Battalion, the Royal Fusiliers, aged just 23. Bliss fought at the Battle of the Somme and was wounded on the 7th of July 1916 while leading an attack on La Boisselle. He later joined the 1st Battalion, the Grenadier Guards, in early 1917 and was promoted to captain. He was gassed on active service at Cambrai in 1918 but survived the war, although his younger brother, 2nd Lieutenant Francis Kennard Bliss of the Royal Field Artillery, a promising poet and painter in his own right, was killed in action at Teepval on the 28th of September 1916, aged 24. He's buried in the Avaloy Communal Cemetery Extension. Bliss's war experiences and the loss of his brother had a lasting effect. He wrote in his autobiography in 1970, As I Remember, "Although the war had been over more than 10 years, I was still troubled by frequent nightmares. They all took the same form. I was still there in the trenches with a few men. We all knew the armistice had been signed, but we'd somehow forgotten, and so had a section of Germans opposite. It was as though we were both doomed to fight on till extinction. I used to wake with horror." Bliss dismissed much of his own pre-war compositions, and it took more than 10 years for him to write about some of his trauma, both in print and in musical form. He dedicated Morning Heroes, a symphony for orator, chorus and orchestra, to the memory of my brother Francis Kennard Bliss and all other comrades killed in battle. When World War II broke out, Bliss took on the role of director of music at the BBC, helping to launch the third programme after the war. He continued to compose and was knighted in 1950, becoming Master of the Queen's Music in 1953 and writing music for her coronation. Bliss died in March 1975, aged 83. Regular listeners to this podcast will recognise that clip of a skylark. It's similar to a sound motif I first heard on Paul Reed's podcast, the Old Front Line, which I believe he recorded as part of the soundscape of the Western Front, and the Somme in particular. The Lark Ascending is one of Ralph Vaughan Williams' best-known works, and it's to him we turn as our final composer. People often believed that The Lark Ascending was inspired by Vaughan Williams' experiences in the war, but in fact it was written and performed before the war started, and is rooted more deeply in his interest in folk songs and the English idyll, a passion he shared with George Butterworth. Ralph Vaughan Williams was born in October 1872 in Down Ampney, Gloucestershire, the son of a well-to-do country vicar. His family had connections by marriage to Josiah Wedgwood and Charles Darwin, and his aunt, Sophie Wedgwood, taught him to play the piano. He was educated near Brighton and Charterhouse near Godalming, before studying music at the Royal College in 1890, and later history at Trinity College, Cambridge. Vaughan Williams was heavily influenced in his early career by Hubert Parry at the Royal College, and later Gustav Holst, who became a lifelong friend. He and Butterworth collected English folk songs, which also shaped their early works, and by the time the war came, Vaughan Williams was an established composer, having just published his own London Symphony. Although aged 42, Vaughan Williams was considered too old to fight. He joined the 2nd 4th London Field Ambulance as part of the Royal Army Medical Corps as a private, driving ambulances and working as a stretcher-bearer on the Western Front and in Salonika. One of Vaughan Williams' colleagues, Private Young, described a typical night as a bearer near Equavre in 1916. Slowly we worked our way along the trenches, our only guide being our feet, forcing ourselves through the black wall of night and helped occasionally by the flash of the torch in front. Soon our arms began to grow tired. The whole weight is thrown onto the slings, which begin to bite into our shoulders. Our shoulders sag forward, and the sling finds its way into the backs of our necks. We feel half suffocated, and with a gasp at one another, the stretcher is slowly lowered to the duckboards. A 12-stone man rolled in several blankets on a stretcher is no mean load to carry when every step has to be carefully chosen, and is merely a shuffle forward of a few inches only. In 1917, aged 45, Vaughan Williams was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Royal Garrison Artillery. He attributed his service as a gunnery officer, firing 60-pounders, as the main cause of his partial deafness later in life. After the war, Vaughan Williams continued to compose music and had a distinguished career, holding posts with a Home Office Committee for the release of interned alien musicians during World War II and on the forerunner of the Arts Council. He died in August 1958, aged 85. Whilst the war had an impact on Vaughan Williams, he survived, despite losing many friends, including Butterworth, Coles and others. He resisted making any connection between his music and his wartime experience, but confided to his second wife, Ursula, that his Pastoral Symphony No. 3, completed in 1921, was really wartime music. A great deal of it incubated when I used to go up at night with the ambulance wagon at Equavre, and we went up a steep hill, and there was a wonderful Corot-like landscape in the sunset. It's not really lambkins frisking at all, as most people take it for granted. I'd like to thank Robert Whedon, author of the excellent website warcomposers.co.uk, a vital resource for anyone wishing to learn more about the lives and work of many other composers who served. And Music Behind the Scenes, a WordPress blog collaboration for the War Centenary between the Westminster Music Library and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. I'd also like to thank Hyperion Records, His Master's Voice, Deutsche Grammophon, and other music publishers for their permission to use some of these short excerpts. Lastly, I'd like to thank the Commonwealth War Graves Commission for access to their archives, the Western Front Association, the Great War Forum, and various website resources for some of the links and photographs on the episode extras page of the Those Who Serve website. Until next time, thank you for listening to me, John Pope, on Those Who Served. You can listen to the show via the website or on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or a host of other platforms. If you listen on Apple, please leave a review, as it makes the show easier for other Apple users to find. You can follow the show on social media via Twitter, at Those Who Served, or on Instagram, those.whoserved. You can show your support for this free podcast by clicking on buymeacoffee.com on the Those Who Served website. All funds are used to cover the costs of research, production, and syndication. You can join in with the show by sharing what details you know of a family member or friend who served in a 20th century conflict. Simply contact me directly by email at info@thosewhoserve.co.uk. Thank you.